Today, mortgage prisoners, cashback's going, rates going up. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Today, I'm joined by Steve from Canstar. Hi, Steve.
G'day, Martin.
Great to have you back on the show, and I'm making this from the UK, but actually the internet connection is better than it was when I was down near Wollongong. Go figure.
Yeah, look, I'm in Melbourne from my usual either Sydney or Brisbane, and I think my coverage isn't too bad, actually. And so I'm told that it's not real great, but I think it's better than I'm used to.
Great. Well, now there's a lot to talk about, and of course the RBA lifted rates last week. The banks have been reporting through the latest results season. And we also noticed that some of the banks now have tuned down their cashbacks. And we also know that refinancing has gone through the roof, according to the latest ABS statistics. So, you know, what's really going on at the moment in the mortgage market?
Yeah, look, they've hit a point of, I think it's sort of one of those moments of truth for the banks. They've allowed certain things to occur over the recent past in the interest of maintaining and growing the market share. They've tightened their margins. Now suddenly they've realised that, look, this can't go on forever. And you know, NAB brought out a result that wasn't a great result, and the market reacted badly to it because their margins had tightened up. So suddenly the banks are looking at it and saying, look, we need to revisit where we are with our interest rate settings. We need to get better margin, restore our margin. Now, it sounds ridiculous to be in this situation when rates have started going up, but this has been different this time because we came off such a low floor and much lower floor. You know, no one had ever heard of 0.10% cash rate before and commensurately low funding rates for the banks. In fact, much more than that, because the Reserve Bank line of credit was for almost nothing. So suddenly they're in a position where they've had to wind back and look at how do we grow our margins back to a sensible level when we've lost that bit of funding. The Reserve Bank keeps bumping up in 0.25, having gone through 0.5% steps. If we turn around and say to the market and the government and the Reserve Bank, yes, we know you put through 0.25, but we're now going to bump our rates up by 0.4%. They will be in a world of pain, and they will cop enormous acrimony. So how they wind this back, I just don't know. They've got a real challenge ahead of them, and cashbacks is one thing. You know, you can't afford to pay $3,000 worth of cashback if you're lending at such tight margins. But that's only a start of it. They've got to do more somehow to restore their margins.
Yes, NAB have announced that they've stopped cashbacks, I think. And of course, the other interesting thing in the statement on monetary policy, the RBA made the comment that the term funding facility program was now starting to be repaid. So that's another drain on the bank's resources.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. The resources are being stretched every way you can imagine. Now, you can't replace that very cheap funding that did exist during the COVID era. So inevitably, you're paying much more for your cost of funds. And that term funding facility was, you know, unheard of prior to this. And it's a luxury that will never return. So they're in trouble. No, Martin, they have themselves to blame to a large degree, because to attract new business, while the Reserve Bank was bumping rates up by 0.5, 0.5, 0.5, 0.25, et cetera, et cetera, the banks have still allowed themselves to offer greater discounts to new borrowers, to the point where the average rate for new borrowers is down around, you know, 0.3, 0.35% lower than the rate for existing customers who've had all of these increases. Now, they've allowed that to happen, which has just aggravated the position they're now finding themselves in. And finally, you know, when they brought out this latest the latest half-year result, they're saying, wow, you know, our margins are getting tight. Well, of course they're getting tight. They've got to somehow fix that.
And, of course, the other interesting thing that we commented on it before was that the deposit rates were not following the lifts. But because of the competitive nature of deposits now, the banks are being squeezed there. They're having to put those deposit rates up more than previously.
Yeah, the this is one of the really strange things that happens in cycles. And it is quite usual for the beginning of an interest rate cycle, an up cycle, so when the Reserve Bank starts putting rates up, it's quite usual for savings rates to lag behind the home loan rates and the Reserve Bank cash rate. And savers usually at this stage, that early stage of the cycle, feel quite cheated. They kind of think, well, hold on a minute. You know, we've gone through this period where we've been tightened up on nonstop for the last few years, several years, and now we're not getting our share back. Well, typically in a cycle, as the cycle goes up and wholesale funding goes up and is high, banks start saying, well, gee, we need to actually start attracting savings money from our regular customers. And they start bumping those savings rates up by more than the home loan rates. So that's what we're starting to see now. And typically in these cycles, and I've gone back for the last two up cycles, the net effect at the end of the upward movement is that savings rates have actually gone up more than home loan rates. Now, it doesn't mean it will happen this time, because you can never say that the past will necessarily totally reflect the past. The past will totally reflect what happens this time around. But that has been quite typical, and we are starting to see that. Now, that, of course, further tightens the bank's margins if they can't turn around and pass it on to borrowers. And I don't think they're going to be in a position to do that.
No, indeed. The pressure on the banks from all sides is clear there. But there's also pressure on households, of course. And it's interesting, CBA published a chart today that showed that the fixed rate cliff is really the next couple of months in particular. There's a huge proportion of people that are really going to get caught.
Yeah, look, when you go back 2 years and you know, the period leading up to that, the big banks were lending to people at 2%, and you could get 3-year loans and 2-year loans for 2%. Now, they were well below the variable rates then, so the incentive was huge to actually take a fixed rate loan. So at one stage, I think CBA reported that they had 60% of their loans going into fixed rates, and they would have been 2 and 3 years. Now, that period has now hit its maturity, which means that those loans that were for 2 years in particular now, but this will stretch out for another year, they're coming off their fixed rate period. And the banks have a rate that they call the revert rate. And that's the rate that customers automatically get rolled into when their fixed rate expires. And that can typically be well over 6% right now. So if you're going from 2% to 6%, you're seeing your repayments double, more or less, in one hit. So overnight, you'll wake up 1 month after you've come off fixed rate, and you'll be on double the home loan repayment. Now, that takes a massive adjustment for households. Now, I hope that these people have, you know, there's been plenty of warning. I hope that over the last 6 months, they've been putting a fair bit away to help, you know, extra away into their loans, to help for the day that arrives, because it's now too late to start preparing, and now time to start coping with that huge jump.
Yes, and NAB, actually, when they gave their last public presentation, spoke specifically about mortgage prisoners. So these are people who are facing these sorts of refinancing issues, mm-hmm. but cannot actually shop around because either their income is not where it needs to be, or the loan to value is not where it... So they're sort of trapped. And I'm not sure how large the proportion of people who are now mortgage prisoners, but NAB is of the view that it's actually rising quite quickly.
It is, and it's true, they are mortgage prisoners. I mean, our normal advice to people at this stage in the cycle is get into the lowest rate loan you can find that gives you flexibility to make extra repayments. And in doing that, even now, you can absorb about half of the total interest rate increases that the Reserve Bank's put through in a year. So it's the right advice for people. But now we've got to put this big proviso on it that says, provided you are in a position to refinance. Now, unfortunately, there are a lot of borrowers, and these are the people that NAB's referring to and you're referring to, Martin, who are not able to do that because they're already in stress. And they're in serious mortgage stress because, and if you're in mortgage stress, no new lender is going to give you a loan to refinance your existing lender. And with the same logic, your existing lender is not going to say, we'll give you the cheapest rate loan or a discount on your loan or some on your interest rate or something like that, when you're a higher risk borrower than borrowers who aren't in this situation. So yes, they're prisoners for that reason. Now, who's likely to be in that category? Well, we did some work on this and said, look, if you borrowed in the 2 years leading up to the Reserve Bank moving, so in other words, the Reserve Bank's first move was in May 2022. So if you borrowed between May 2022, anyway, the 2 years preceding that, then you'll be in mortgage stress if you borrowed up to your borrowing capacity. So in other words, you went to the bank and said, look, how much can I borrow at a maximum? And you borrowed that much. If you did that in the 2 years leading up to April 2022, you will be in severe mortgage stress. If 30% or more of your income is going towards your home loan repayments, you're in stress. Now, if you bought in the year or just before April 2022 when the rates started going up, you're likely to be at 42%. Not 30%, but 42%. If you borrowed a year earlier, gee, you've got the luxury of being at 38%. Now, that's really quite scary because, you know, by the time you pay your tax out of your income and then leave money for the rates and the electricity and the insurances, there's not much left after the home loan repayment to cover the other ordinary living expenses like groceries and clothing and transport, etc. So that's a big group of people. You know, it's in Australia, it's around 300,000 people who were first home buyers in that period, and you know, they're likely to be the ones that have borrowed right up to the hilt. So there'll be a lot of stress in particular in that group, but not just that group.
Yes, and of course, the definition of stress is quite interesting. When I look at it in my models, I don't use that set 30%. I actually do a real calculation of money in, money out, because it is a cash flow question, right? And it's about how much people are actually getting into their accounts and how much are going out. By the way, a lot of people still don't actually understand their own cash flow very well. But we've seen the number go up quite dramatically, a lot of those first-time buyers. And then if you think of the overlay of mortgage prisoners, which are the ones who are unable to refinance, one of the things that I'm seeing, unfortunately, is that they are being forced now to grab more credit on credit cards, for example. In other words, short-term interim funding to try and actually get by. Now, I'm really concerned about this, Steve, because what people are doing is actually digging a bigger hole for themselves, because I don't think this is going to get fixed in a few months. We're not going to suddenly see interest rates come down. We're not going to suddenly see wages growth explode. So unfortunately, a lot of people, I think, are just taking short-term tactical steps to try and just get by, but it may actually be the wrong decision into the medium term.
Oh, yeah, look, resorting to credit cards is just a disaster. Credit cards, they're a great product used the right way. Now, the design of a credit card was that you used it to make big purchases that you probably didn't have you couldn't afford in your savings account. You put it there, and over the next 3 or 4 months, you repaid it and got back down to zero and started again. That was the whole principle behind the design. Now, the right way for the banks is actually to let people run them a bit of credit, because they make pretty broad margins on that. You know, they're lending at 13-14% at the lowest compared to 4% at the lowest, for 5% at the lowest for home loans. So that's a pretty good business, provided they get repaid. But the problem is when people say, oh, look, I have this long-term problem with my finances because I can't afford this bigger repayment. Oh, I'll put 25% of the repayment. I'll put $200 a month, $300 a month into my credit card, and that will tide me over. Well, it will for a while, but sooner or later you'll hit your limit. You'll have to make repayments. And in the long term, if you've done that for a year or two, you'll be behind the eight ball, you'll be clear and go long term. You have to think of better solutions than that one. And the better solution, as you always talk about, Martin, I agree totally, is that you've got to look at your cash in and cash out, work out a way to get more cash in and work out a way to trim the expenses on cash out. And you know, you can do it. You can get the cash out, the expenses down on the big things like insurances, power bills, rates. Well, you can't get rates down, unfortunately. But then you can get the smaller bills down. And you think of the smaller bills, a lot of them are little luxuries. Maybe you can do without the luxuries for the time being. Cash in, well, you know, that requires a real adjustment for people, because in a lot of cases it does mean getting an extra job, you know, working a second job, a second part-time job. Hopefully it's only for a short period, because home incomes go up to help cover the probably start to fall. So it's a great forgiver in time. So I think when people think about the sacrifice they're going to have to make, but you've got to be prepared to do it for the time being, because you must hold on to your house.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other interesting observation is that, of course, the banks are saying, well, we'll try and be really flexible. You know, we'll try and help people as best we can. So they're doing things like extending the term of the loan, going interest only, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no real evidence yet that the banks are actively wanting to foreclose on people. They want to try and muddle through. But sometimes those strategies benefit the banks rather than the borrowers.
They do, Martin. Get over the immediacy of the problem. But if you think about those solutions, let's say the bank puts you on, in 3 or 5 years, you're going to owe a lot of cash to the bank period. Your principal won't have gone right thing. Your repayment won't go up after 3 years as it does with fixed rate. But you will find that you, over the period of the loan, first off, the loan will be, you'll be repaying the loan for, you know, 5 or 10 years longer. So, you know, you instead of having the loan repaid at 45 or 50, it'll be 55 or 60. You'll be paying $100,000 more or whatever on your loan. So both of those solutions hurt in the long term. That doesn't mean they're the wrong thing to do. They can be the right thing to do for a period, but only for a period. Take control of it yourself if you do that. And get yourself to the point where you say, okay, this is, the bank's done this or agreed to this for 5 years or for the life of the loan, but I'm not agreeing to that for the life of the loan. I'm agreeing to it for 2 years. After 2 years, I'm going to bump my own repayments up so that I get the loan repaid in faster time. You must do that. Otherwise, you'll find yourself at the end of your working life having a far less a standard of living in retirement.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly seeing that in my surveys again. So people are actually getting to the end of their working career and they've still got the mortgage hanging over their head. Mm. And then they've got that big decision about whether they actually pay the mortgage down based out of superannuation. But if you do that, then what you're doing is essentially reducing your future income for, into retirement. And that can be a problem too. So there's no such thing as a free lunch here. And quite often what I think is that you're right, people maybe need to take short-term decisions to be able to get through, but they can't then set and forget. They can't just assume then that, well, 40 years' time or 30 years' time, you know, it'll be fine. Won't necessarily. You have to actually have a plan. And again, in my surveys, Steve, I see a lot of people who really don't have a good financial plan to be able to manage this stuff. It's sort of a bit hand-to-mouth day-to-day. And in the current environment, it seems to me that that is actually a really problematic approach. You need to have a plan. You need to actually have a cash flow. You need to understand what's going on. And this is about, I guess, managing your financial position in a sort of holistic way, checking the rates that you're paying, understanding what your cash flow is, and, taking an active interest, because it's really critical that you do.
Is it ever? And you know, it's a lot easier to do than people think. We run a financial literacy quiz at the moment, and it's a little bit scary. You know, it's around about half of people fail. I mean, it's half pass, which is good, but a pass is still only 50-50. It's not like you're some sort of guru. But people shouldn't sort of try to make this rocket science. You start with I guess two columns. You've got cash coming in and cash going out, and coming in, you just say, well, all right, you know, this is what we get paid every month, and then here are the outgoings. You know, you've already taken your tax out, etc. Here are all of the things that I have to pay. And you just go back through your credit card statements and your bank statements over a year and say, all right, here they all are. Here are the big bills that are paid irregularly, and here are the small bills, and here's what we spend on living. And then you've got to get a bit granular about it. So you've got the big numbers and say, well, all right, now what are the bits that I have to spend? And they're the things that are just the absolute essentials of life. What are the bits that I can cut out altogether? And they're the luxuries. And what are the bits that I'm paying too much for? And that means sort of changing providers for, in the first instance, the big things like insurers and electricity, but also the smaller things. You know, maybe I can get more home brands, for example, or shop at a different kind of store, or not go designer labels or whatever it is. There are plenty of ways to save. So you've got to work all of those things out. But it's not rocket science. You've got to start, though, with here's today in the last 12 months, and then say, now, what's today made up of, and how can I cut those back?
Yeah, and I tell you what, in my surveys, I do see some people who start that journey and then actually get scared when they actually write it down. I think, wow, we're spending that amount on those things?
Yeah.
And in a way, that's my argument. That's precisely why you need to do it. And, you know, the discipline is not huge, but it's really important. But then you've got to keep at it. And then you've got to say, well, hang on, where are those higher interest rates? What am I spending that on? Can I actually get rid of those, for example, higher rate cards? Can I get my mortgage rate down? So things like CanStar and the comparison sites, really, really important tool to be able to actually begin to work out how to actually trim things down. And I think that's a really important message, Steve, because you can't just rely on the bank to phone up and say, hey, you know, we've got a solution for you. You've actually got to own the problem and then begin to think it through.
Yeah, look, we said right at the beginning of this conversation that the banks were looking for ways to get bigger margin. They're not looking for ways to give you your share of the margin. They're trying to grow. So that's not going to happen. Look, you're absolutely right. There are we talked about people in stress that don't have the capacity at the moment to actually go to the bank and get a decrease. But there is a big group there that actually can refinance and get a better deal. Now, if you think about anyone who bought into the property market in Australia 3 years plus ago, they have built up a lot of equity. Even someone that bought 2 years ago has built up a lot of equity in the property. Even just 2 years ago, they've got something like 34% equity in their property now, just based on average price increases. So people have equity, which in the first instance says to the bank, look, we can afford to lend this person more money, or we, and this is a refinancing bank, another bank from your existing one potentially, we can afford to lend to this person and refinance them at a lower rate because we won't lose money. They own a lot of their house. So, you know, a lot of people are in that position. Now, of course, you need to have the income as well. But there are a lot of people in the position to refinance, and you'd be mad not to, because there are still a bunch of loans below 5.5%. The average is well over 6% now. So you know, you've got to take advantage of it and do it while you're in a strong position. Don't wait until you're in trouble, because as we said before, you will be a captive.
Absolutely. Think ahead, plan ahead, and know your finances is, I think, a really important piece of advice at the moment. You know, prospects are rates could go a little higher from this point. You know, the RBA said it may have to put rates up further. Nobody knows. But we do know that pressures on households are going to continue. Inflation is still quite strong, and real incomes aren't growing that much. So this is a really important set of tools that you've got at your disposal, and really important to take account of them and use them. And I always say to people, you know, there are things you can do to manage your finances better. And in the current environment, it's pretty critical to use them.
Oh, look, it absolutely is. Martin, the reason I was smiling when you said the RBA might have to put rates up again, I wasn't smiling because I think that's a great prospect. I was smiling because my strike rate on predicting what the Reserve Bank can do over the last two increases or potential increases is zero out of two. I think they made a mistake back in April in pausing. I think they should have kept rates up by another 0.25 in April and then watched the quarterly inflation figure to see whether they needed to go again. So I thought they made a mistake in holding it still then. Having held it still then, I thought it was highly unlikely that they would turn around a month later and say, oh, yes, we said we'd stay in and watch, and we've watched for a month. We don't like it, so we're bumping it up again. I didn't think they'd do that. So I'm none out of two in trying to predict what the Reserve Bank will do. But look, I think there's enough stickiness in inflation to say that the Reserve Bank can't stop just yet. And that's not great news for people I know, but I think they're going to have to keep going at least for another one, maybe even another two, which is a bit scary. But the problem is that one of the problems they're faced with is that they've proven to us now that they have very little faith in the monthly inflation data, because the quarterly is a lot more stringent, and there are some of those lumpier kind of bills that are factored in more realistically into the quarterly inflation number than in the monthly one. And I think what the Reserve Bank really meant back in April is that we wanted to watch and see what the data does for another bit of time. But in fact, what they were really saying is we want to wait and see what the quarterly one looks like. So I think they've shown they have very little faith in the month by month, and that's the quarterly one that matters. So what does that mean? It could mean that they hold off until the next quarter, but, you know, that's a quarter is a long time if they've got it wrong. So I think they're faced with a very difficult decision this coming time because, you know, if they don't move and they should have, then it could make the pain a lot worse later on because the cycle of tightening is loosened on people and they start relaxing and spending and they lose control of it again. So if they don't act and have to wait 3 months before they can act on quarterly data, they can lose control of it. The alternative, though, is that if they act on without the next quarter's data and overreach, they could drive the whole economy further down and into recession potentially. So it's a very difficult decision this next 2 months.
I agree. The RBA, I think, will be signalling, according to the latest data that they're showing at the moment, that rates are unlikely to come down anytime soon. And inflation is not going to come to within band until 24, 25. So the prospect could be of higher rates, which comes right back to the point then, well, you can't rely on the RBA to get you out of jail here. Therefore, it's back to taking your own control, your own initiative.
Yeah.
Own your own finances. And I think more than ever, I think that's the closing message for today, Steve. You've got to own your own finances. You can't rely on external factors to fix this.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we talked about how you budget. Well, it's critical that you do it. Don't be disheartened when you see a first number that says I'm $1,000 a month short, $1,500 a month short, and don't underestimate there'll be people in that position, because you know it's when the devil's in the detail, and when you get in the details, you'll say, well, look, I can save money by cutting these things out. You know, if you buy a daily coffee on your way to work, these days you're up for $25 a week. That's $100 a month. Now, look for that sort of thing. Look for those little savings. Look for the bigger savings with those big bills. And if you still can, refinance your loan into a lower rate. All of those things do cut $1,000, $1,500 off your monthly spend potentially. We did the research a little while back and said, how many of these little things would you have to do to save, you know, $500 or $600? And it's amazing how quickly you get there. You know, you cut out things like multiple streaming services and coffees and all those sort of luxuries, and you get there. You don't eat out, you eat at home, you get there. So all of those things do mount up unbelievably quickly, and people forget. So don't get disheartened when you see that first headline number that says, oh, gee, where am I going to find another $1,000 every month? You find it through cutting back.
Yeah, good advice, Steve. And it is, it's the nickel and diming, you know, can make a huge amount of difference. And like I say, in my surveys, only about half of households have any sense of where their money is coming in and where it's going to. So there are a lot of households there who could really benefit from, you know, just taking more control. I appreciate your time today, Steve, and thanks for giving us your insights as always. We'll have another chat down the road as things develop. And I suspect that the next couple of months will be continually talking about inflation, higher rates, and mortgage paying.
Yeah, I think we'll be discussing this tightrope or knife edge that we're walking along for the next 6 months or so, Martin. You know, we'll be saying, well, if the Reserve Bank doesn't move next month or the month after, which month will they move, rather than, will they move or not? It will be more which month.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate your time, and talk again soon.
Thanks, Martin.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.